The U.S. opioid addiction crisis is a presidential campaign issue and a White House priority.
When you look at the staggering statistics in terms of lives lost, productivity impacted, costs to communities, but most importantly, cost to families from this epidemic of opioids abuse, it has to be something that is right up there at the top of our radar screen.
The specific rules to address the opioid and heroin crisis may double the access of patients to synthetic drug treatments. The rules would permit 200 per doctor to use the drug Suboxone, up from 100. The announcement expanding medication-assisted treatment comes along with other new funding for addiction treatment in President Obama's proposed budget. The president was in Atlanta yesterday at the National Prescription Drug Abuse and Heroin Summit and said he thinks Americans still underestimate the scope of the opiate addiction problem. Stephen Dakota is a physician at Norton Healthcare, a Suboxone clinic located in Norton, Massachusetts, and joins us from WGBH in Boston, where he says you might be surprised by how widely used the Suboxone treatment is.
In our practice, we have people from all walks of life, ranging from people in the trades, plumbers, electricians, to elementary school teachers, to law enforcement, soccer moms, the whole range of people. You really can't tell when people are stable and when people are doing well. That's the beauty of this medication and this treatment modality.
Dr. Dakota, is this a cure or is this an interim treatment until something can be found to actually eliminate the withdrawal symptoms and get people off drugs entirely?
Every person is different. When I meet a new patient, I ask them, what's your goal? Do you want to be in and out of here in 3 months or 6 months? Are you happy just to be stable for the foreseeable future? It all comes down to a person's ability to get everything else together in their lives in terms of getting their job situation back together, repairing problems with their relationship that they might have, getting rid of all the work that it took to maintain an opiate habit. It's exhausting for people to get money, to get Percocet, to get heroin, even when they have unlimited supply of money or Percocet or heroin. Suboxone really allows people to resume their life, feel normal, feel the same every day, and then do the work that it takes to really get off of it. And every person's ability to do the work, and by do the work, I mean go to therapy, go to meetings, address any mental health issues they might have, get a handle on any physical ailments that they might have, get a good relationship with primary care. And the more work that people do on all those other things, the more successful they're likely to be to get Suboxone out of their life as well.
How long have you been affiliated with the Suboxone Clinic?
This Suboxone Clinic, Norton Healthcare, since 2013. But I've prescribed it in the setting of primary care back in 2002 or 2003. I also used it in the setting of a methadone clinic in 2009 or 2010. We've learned over time that really the best way to approach people is to make them feel good about themselves, remove any kind of stigma associated with opiate addiction, and to empower people to really take control of their lives again and to feel good about themselves.
An old story of empathy and compassion. Can I ask you how many patients you've lost?
That's hard to know. I don't know of any specific people that I've lost from my Suboxone clinic. I know that there's people that I've worked with in my previous job at a correctional facility. We hear about people that have been released and they did well in the community for a while and then you find out that they've overdosed, they relapsed and overdosed. So it's probably 10 to 20 of those stories that I can remember right now.
So even with Suboxone, you're pretty close to the edge.
Yeah, it definitely helps a lot of people. It definitely prevents a lot of people from relapsing and overdosing. But it does have to be used correctly. It has to be supervised. You have to really connect with your patients. You have to take a step closer to them when they slip up instead of two steps back, which is what everyone else in their life tends to do. And really provide more support and more empathy and more just trying to find out what it is that they need to work on next.
Stephen Dakota is a physician at Norton Healthcare, a Suboxone clinic located in Norton, Massachusetts. He joined us from the WGBH studios in Boston. Thank you so much, doctor.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Of the 47,000 people who died of drug overdoses in 2014, 18,000 died from prescription opioid painkillers. But what's the big picture here? How many addicts are there in America? How many people are in medical need of opioid drugs? How have prescription drugs changed the demographics and numbers in the suddenly not-so-underground world of narcotics? And one more thing, how profitable are these drugs to market? Purdue Pharma, the maker of OxyContin, has generated estimated sales of more than $35 billion since releasing its timed-released, supposedly addiction-proof version of the painkiller oxycodone back in 1995. Joining me now is Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy and director of the Crime Reduction and Justice Initiative at New York University's Marin Institute. He's also the editor of the Journal of Drug Policy Analysis. Professor, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hello.
How do we get a picture here of the medical needs that are being met by these opioid drugs versus the abusers? And we hear about the fatalities of the abusers, but that doesn't necessarily tell us how many people are actually addicted and maintaining their addiction.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't tell us how many people are using the opioids non-medically but also not addictively. And it's not as if there's a sharp line there. We also don't have a good picture of the need, right? So you see some of the pain advocacy groups saying there are 100 million Americans in chronic pain. Really?
Yeah, that seems a lot.
One out of three?
I mean, in chronic pain that you would need a narcotic.
Well, right. The problem is for lots of medical conditions, there's a test you can do. There's a picture you can take. Gee, we took an x-ray. There's a mass on your lung. Okay, that's not your opinion.
Right.
How much pain are you in? The basic diagnostic technique for pain.
The 1 to 10 test.
Is the 1 to 10 test, completely unanchored to any actual fact about the world.
No, but I read that if you say 8, they'll give you opioids.
I thought it was 7, but you might be right.
I mean, it's almost like that's wrong of us to say on the air.
Purdue Pharma, which is the manufacturer of OxyContin, did a brilliant job of harnessing the perfectly genuine cause of pain advocacy to its bottom line. First, they persuaded the VA and then other people that pain was a fifth vital sign, that after taking your temperature, your blood pressure, your pulse rate, and your respiration, every medical exam ought to involve asking you, well, how much does it hurt? And showing you the 10 frowny to smiley faces and saying, you know, score your pain on a level of 1 to 10. And then, yes, some arbitrary number gets to be the level at which you're prescribed opiates. That's not good medicine. And on the other hand, what was going on through the 1970s was also not good medicine. People died in agony from cancer because their physicians were afraid that if they gave them opiates, they'd become addicted.
Right. That was the right? Lack of palliative care.
Right. So
– but back then – let me just stop you for a second. Back then, wasn't it just morphine and Dilaudid and maybe Demerol, and that was all there was, right?
Yeah. I mean, codeine was there.
Hydrocodone
was there. Oxycodone, I think, is a little later, but all these drugs were on the market. I mean, they're not new inventions.
But there's Vicodin now.
Vicodin is hydrocodone.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Oxycontin is oxycodone. These are codeine derivatives.
Right.
No, what's new is not the range of chemicals. The single thing I'd point out most was the Supreme Court decision on commercial free speech. Right. Supreme Court ruled that it was not permissible under the First Amendment to regulate truthful communication about lawful products. And that meant that we are the only country in the world where pharmaceutical manufacturers are allowed to put ads on TV, ask your doctor about
heroin, basically heroin.
Right. And I read, I don't have these data, but I read that OxyContin, which was the extended release oxycodone product, had the largest advertising budget of any drug in the history of the world.
And now you've got these drugs that are for people who have constipation as a result of taking opioids, as though this
right.
is a huge priority. And I asked a doctor about this, and he, you know, practically whacked me over the head and said, this is a serious problem. Don't make fun of these people. But I can't get the priority straight in my head.
No, look, if you've got – but the thing is, okay, I don't believe that there are 100 million people in chronic pain that need opioids. Do I believe that there are 10 million? Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I mean, having been one of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I spent 20 years – pretty much incapacitated with back pain. Now, I was one of the very small minority where that's fixable surgically, and I finally got it fixed surgically. But in the meantime, I needed those opiates and had to decide every day whether to take the opiate and be out of pain or not take the opiate and be able to work. So no, the side effects are not to be dismissed, and it was only after I'd gotten the surgery that I learned that you can get rid of the drowsiness with a little amphetamine. and that the amphetamine will actually potentiate the pain relief. This is textbook medicine. And I called a friend of mine who's, you know, does medical research in this area, and I said, look, is this true? I read him the paragraph. I said, is this true? And he said, oh, yeah, everybody knows that. I said, well, then how come I wasn't given some amphetamine to make it possible for me to work, you know, on the opiate and take less opiate? And he said, come on, Mark. You go down to your corner drugstore with a prescription for oxycodone and a prescription for amphetamine. What's the first thing the druggist is going to do? He's going to call the DEA and he says, I got a Dr. Feelgood here. I got to write somebody who's writing prescriptions for uppers and downers. So the physicians just don't do that, even though it's textbook medicine, because they're afraid of getting hammered. Also turns out this is not absolutely nailed down, but the animal workers there, if you add a little bit of naloxone, which is the antagonist, to an opioid prescription, you potentiate the pain relief. Hmm. You can give less opiate and have the people get the pain relief. So yes, we should be worried about overprescribing. We should also be worried about teaching physicians to do opioid prescriptions correctly.
That was Mark Kleiman, professor of public policy and director of the Crime Reduction and Justice Initiative at New York University's Marin Institute.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.